Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you all for participating in today's Teleflex conference. My name is Diana Daskalou-Jaffe, and I'm Senior General Counsel for a regional clean energy organization based in Maryland called the Chesapeake Climate Action Network, or CCAMP for short. I will be moderating this Teleflex conference and have brought you all here today to announce historic state and federal actions on the controversial practice known as fracking for natural gas. Before I tell you more about the federal action, I'm going to quickly lay out the agenda for this call. The speakers will make their statements, followed by a question and answer period. Journalists can access the question queue at any time during the call by pressing star one on their phone keypad. After the Q&A period, the speakers will make brief closing statements as well. Our speaker lineup today includes myself, Diana Daskalou-Jaffe, on behalf of the Chesapeake Climate Action Network, State Senator Brian Frosch, State Senator Jamie Raskin, and Delegate Heather Mizzou. But first, I will begin with a brief overview about the groundbreaking federal action announced just minutes ago. CCAN, along with 16 other national, state, and local organizations from across the country, filed a legal petition with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, urging them to require, for the first time, that the oil and gas industry, including companies engaged in natural gas fracking, be added to a comprehensive national chemical reporting inventory called the Toxic Release Inventory, or TRI for short. Despite the fact that the oil and gas industry now emits roughly 127,000 tons of hazardous air pollutants per year, which is more than any other industry except one that is already required to report to the TRI, the oil and gas industry has been exempt from reporting the quantity and types of toxic chemicals used and released throughout the drilling process. With the explosion of this industry throughout the country in the last decade, given the advent of this new and destructive form of drilling called hydrofracturing that releases gas from deep shale rock formations, the need for full disclosure of the chemicals that are polluting communities near these fracking operations is evident now more than ever. This reporting and information is especially important for shale states like Maryland, where fracking hasn't yet begun, to understand the nature of these processes that are looking to set up shop in the rural communities of Western Maryland. The lack of reliable or consistent information about the use and release of toxic chemicals by this industry has been a long-standing problem among the many unknown impacts associated with natural gas fracking. This is why our distinguished Maryland state legislators are here today to announce their endorsement of a state moratorium on fracking activities in Maryland until further safety and environmental studies are complete. They are here today to share their thoughts on the federal EPA petition and state fracking moratorium legislation. Also, the full legal petition and subsequent press materials associated with the national petition release are available at the following website for journalists: www.environmentalintegrity.org. Okay. So now we can go on to our other speakers, starting with Senator Frosch. Please kick us off.
Hi. Thank you. Good to be with you all this afternoon. First, I want to thank CCAN for the petition it's filing with the Environmental Protection Agency, urging them to impose strong regulations on the oil and gas industry, especially with respect to the use and release of toxic chemicals by the industry into the environment. The whole debate about fracking is about potential. It does have the potential to provide a relatively inexpensive source of domestic energy, and that is good potential. But it also has the potential to damage our natural resources, pollute our air and water, and endanger the health of Marylanders. And we've seen this played out all across the country. States that have failed to take a strong, diligent risk assessment prior to authorizing fracking operations have paid a high price. There are thousands of cases of well contamination, water well contamination, that have been documented near fracking sites in Colorado, New Mexico, Alabama, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and a high proportion of the wells within a relatively small radius of these gas fields often become contaminated. Sometimes they have so much explosive gas, the wells can't be opened for fear of explosion, and there have been explosions, not just the pollution of water, water sources. Fracking in our sister states also causes serious problems with air pollution. In Wyoming, they failed to meet federal standards for air quality for the first time in its history, partly because of the fumes containing benzene and toluene from about 27,000 wells, the vast majority of which have been drilled in the past 6 or 7 years. In one sparsely populated county, Sublette County in Wyoming, which has some of the highest concentrations of wells, their vapors that react to the sunlight have contributed levels of ozone, and this is all from the New York Times, by the way, contributed levels of ozone higher than those recorded in Houston and Los Angeles. We, you know, many of us in Maryland live in urbanized areas, and we live with ozone pollution every day, or many days. But our neighbors in rural areas have not experienced that, and it's not good for us. It's not good for them. We struggle with the dense development and use of automobiles and industry that causes it. But Western Maryland and other rural areas don't have that problem yet. Another point I think is worthy of note is that it takes millions of gallons of fresh water to pump into a fracking well. The water becomes contaminated. It's either pumped deep into the ground, or it's held in reservoirs up on the land, but it is up on the surface. But it's a hazard as well, especially given the toxic chemicals that are used to make this fracking operation work. The toxic chemicals that are used to introduce into the water that are necessary for fracking. I don't think we can risk having the same attitude that we have too often taken with respect to our economy. Give me the payoff right now. Let somebody else worry about the second and third order effects when a crisis occurs. We have the opportunity to get out in front of this. And the writer Wendell Berry once said that whether politicians know it or not, nature is party to all of our deals and decisions, and she has more votes, a longer memory, and a sterner sense of justice than we do. I think it's important that we move prudently, cautiously, and intelligently, and that we wait until we know the proper way to do it, the potential impacts on Maryland if we do it. The gas that we're talking about has been there for millions of years. It's going to be there for quite a while longer. We need to protect our citizens. We need to protect our natural resources. We need to protect our environment before we take great risks with this. And so I think the moratorium makes a great deal of sense.
All right. Thank you, Senator Frosch. Now we're going to move on to Senator Jamie Raskin.
Thank you very much. Delighted to be with everybody. And to add a few thoughts here, I also wanted to echo Senator Frosch's praise of CCAN and the other environmental groups nationally who are pressing the EPA to include the fracking industry in the toxics release inventory, which began in 1986 as part of the Emergency Planning and Community Right to Know Act. And the purpose of that petition is all about getting the public the information that it needs in order to make responsible decisions about our environmental future. And that's exactly what we need to do in Maryland, which is a prosperous state that has prospered by virtue of having strong environmental laws and strong public health protections. And in Maryland, we believe that economic prosperity and public health and safety go together. So we're looking in Maryland for exactly what the groups are looking for at the national level: information that is indispensable to making responsible public health and public safety choices about environmental policy. I've also familiarized myself with what's taken place in other states where fracking has gone forward without the necessary studies and analysis and regulatory control. And there are states that have turned up with contaminated wells, flammable tap water, and lots of other environmental problems. You know, we have a mysterious new sequence of earthquakes that seem to be in the neighborhood of fracking. I certainly don't remember any earthquakes growing up here before, but experienced one, I think it was a couple of years ago. So there are a lot of questions that really need to be answered about this. And, you know, the governor did issue an executive order to create a study to address both the short-term and the long-term cumulative effects of the fracking process. And, you know, one of the things specifically to be looked at is the risk of contamination of groundwater and surface water through the fracking process. So I think while we're waiting for all of this information to be forthcoming at the national level, while we're waiting for all of this information to be forthcoming at the state level, we need to look before we leap. You know, I believe that there is a lot more information that we need and a lot more analysis that has to be done before fracking should proceed in the state of Maryland. You know, we have, we have had these resources under the ground from time immemorial, and they're not going anyplace. So there's no reason for us to rush this process and ignore pressing and important public health and environmental concerns. So I'm delighted to join with Senator Frosch and Delegate Mazier and our environmental leaders to say that this is a moment when all of us need to take a deep breath make sure that we do the right thing for our future and the future of our kids and grandchildren.
Okay, thank you so much, Senator Raskin. And finally, we'll end off these beginning remarks with Delegate Heather Mazur.
Thanks very much. I think it's important to start with a recognition that for a few years now, across the country, advocates, environmentalists, people who care about making sure we do this in the right way has been fighting the powerful oil and gas industry with one hand tied behind our backs, because the federal government really hasn't been as engaged on this as we would like, in part because the oil and gas industry was successful in getting getting themselves exempted from the 2005 Energy Policy Act, what we often affectionately call the Cheney-Halliburton loophole. And as it's been pointed out, and hopefully soon to be corrected through the action of all of the environmental groups coming together with the petition to the EPA today, that the oil and gas industry has not been subject to the toxic release inventory. And I think this is all helpful approaches to partner with the direction that Maryland has been taking of do this right, be pragmatic, disclose information, have more transparency, let everyone understand what's at risk here before making a decision on whether or not we want to put a drill in the ground. Fracking chemicals are a particularly dangerous part of the drilling process. They're involved in two steps, the initial drilling, and then after the fracking's done, the chemicals come back in the form of drilling mud and fracking wastewater, and there are big questions that remain on how to dispose of that and how do you treat it and what's the impact of those chemicals when they're down in the wells and are they having an effect on the groundwater supply. We've asked the industry for stronger reporting in Maryland, and they've stonewalled our efforts here. And with getting the EPA on board, we have hope that we will have the tools necessary to fight the industry's deception tactics on this front. This petition is really important because we need to know what's going into the ground, what's coming back out, and how the industry is disposing of this toxic waste. Evidence continues to mount that fracking has serious risks, from well casing failures that allow methane gas to migrate and causing greater impact on climate change or the flammable tap water we have seen in iconic movies like Gasland, to chemical spills and leaks in neighboring states that have caused fish kills and livestock quarantines and many earthquakes. These chemicals are escaping into our environment daily, and we need industry cooperation and disclosure to ensure that we can properly protect and safeguard our drinking water, our family farms, and the wildlife here in Maryland. And if the EPA acts on this petition, we'll be able to better monitor pollution and environmental harm on a not just on a national scale, but it will give us a greater ability to address this issue in the state as we are attempting to dive into this through our commission work. Absent the federal government adding the oil and gas extraction industry to the list of toxic release inventory, it's going to be up to the states to do the regulating. And in Maryland, we're doing our homework on fracking first because we want to make sure that if it's done at all, it's done right. We're seeking a full range of rigorous environmental impact, public health, and safety studies. And coming into this next session, we're partnering. Senators Frosch and Raskin and Pinsky and I are all going to be partnering together to try to give us what we need to hold the industry accountable through a legislative moratorium proposal. Right now, there's nothing to stop the industry from suing the state to get a fracking permit. At best, Maryland's current policy is a de facto moratorium, and it needs more teeth. It's why we're going to go down this road of seeking a legislative moratorium to safeguard our residents' land and pristine waterways from this controversial and potentially risky drilling practice. And the moratorium would be a legal guarantee that would prevent any drilling permits from being issued until our comprehensive studies are completed to the satisfaction of the General Assembly. We're coming at this issue from all sides. With this petition, we're working to close the federal loophole for drillers across the country that will also strengthen our hand here in Maryland. And coming up in this session, we're going to be sending a message at the state level that no studies in Maryland means no fracking in Maryland.
Okay, great. Thank you, Delegate Mazur. So now we will move to questions. And as a reminder to journalists, dial *1 on your phone keypad to enter the question queue. And when it's your turn in the question queue, you will hear a prompt letting you know that your line is unmuted, and you can then proceed to ask your question. Journalists, also please make sure you state your name and your outlet before asking your question in the queue. And then when speakers are up to answer the question, please confirm who you are before answering the question so that the journalists don't get confused with voices. So let's see now if we have – I'm going to take a brief pause just to let some journalists have time to go ahead and get in the queue by pressing *1 and to ask their question in the queue as well. So we're just going to take a brief pause here for about a minute, and then we will move on to the first question. Okay, it looks like we have one question now, so we'll go ahead and start with the first question.
This is Bree Benishore with WAMU. I want to know, why is this moratorium necessary when you have the governor's executive order?
Thank you for the question. The governor's executive order put in place a plan for studying 14 various areas that impact environment, public health, economic review of the impact on the drilling areas, and a goal for having those studies completed by 2014 so that a decision could be made on whether or not to drill. Up till now, the oil and gas industry has stonewalled and is playing a game of chicken with us and trying to make sure that we don't have the resources necessary to fund these comprehensive, independent, robust scientific reviews, and instead just waiting out the clock and hoping that at the end of the day we'll make a decision to allow them to drill with some, you know, lesser version of a study that could be completed with existing resources. What we're coming into this session to say with the moratorium language is we want the policy of the state of Maryland to be very clear. We are going to have no drilling in Maryland until or unless these studies take place. So rather than the industry just waiting until 2014 and presuming that we make a decision on whether or not to drill no matter how the studies come out, it's clear that we're not going to issue any drilling permits until the studies are completed. The governor's executive order is time limited, and there isn't funding for the studies at this point. The Department of the Environment and Natural Resources are stretched very thin, and we have tried to get funding from the industry to fund this by charging a $10 per acre fee for the 160,000 acres that are already leased for this purpose, and we've passed that bill twice in the House of Delegates, and twice it hasn't been allowed to even have a vote in the Senate committees. So we're partnering up together and putting a strong push with Frosch and Raskin and Penske engaged on this year to send this very clear message. And I think it's also important to clarify that we have no guarantees that if the oil and gas industry right now were to sue the agencies for a decision on a permit, that the executive order would stand. We don't know for sure that the industry, that the agencies wouldn't have to make a decision absent the clear statutory language that we're trying to get in place that will give teeth to the moratorium and make it not just a de facto moratorium, but an actual legislative moratorium with guidelines on and a framework for how we move forward if we're going to move forward at all.
And would this still include funding for those studies?
I think what we're looking at doing at this point is to include authorization for the agencies to be able to apply the per acre fee to the industry, always leaving open the opportunity for there to be new funding that would come along. But unlike the commission, where you're sitting here saying we're going to make a decision in 2014 whether based on the studies that come out, and you're waiting to see what kind of study we can produce, and the industry has an incentive to try to keep the studies from being able to be robust so that there's a decision on a weaker study that's being made on that timeline, we're changing the framework of this to say, it's okay, industry, if you want to stall and not help us find the funding and not allow us to do the studies, we just have the policy that we won't drill. If you want us to take this seriously and consider whether or not we want to allow drilling to go forward, you will partner with us to figure out how we do these independent scientific reviews.
Okay. Thanks.
And that was Delegate Heather Mazur, by the way, commenting on that question. Okay, we can move on to the next question.
Hey, this is Alexander Piles from the Daily Record. My question is for the senators. Doug and Azir, you just touched on this, but fracking legislation has been hung up in the Senate in the last couple of years, and I'm just wondering what needs to happen to get this thing moving through committee and onto the floor.
This is Brian Frosch. Well, I mean, I think we've got to convince the committee that it's the right thing to do. It's that simple. We need to. I think we've got a majority of the Senate that will go with us if we can get a favorable committee report. But it's been a struggle the past couple of years. The issue is framed, I think, quite a bit differently this year than it has been in the past. And it really comes down to the question of whether we're going to take the important and intelligent steps in order to figure out whether fracking works and in what circumstances. In the past, it's been a kind of a struggle about whether we're going to drill or whether we're not going to drill, and if we're going to drill, under what conditions. It's been drawn down to a pretty fine point, and that is, I think, one that's unassailably reasonable, and that is, are we going to take the steps that are necessary to ensure that our environment, our natural resources, and our people are safe if we go ahead and allow fracking? And we can't tell what those steps are until the studies have been completed. We've learned a lot from our sister states, but unfortunately, most of the lessons have been lessons in disaster. We'd prefer not to learn that way. We'd prefer to get it right and then start. And if we don't get it right, hold on. As I said before, gas is going to be there for quite a while longer. It's been there for millions of years already. It's not going anywhere.
And this is Jimmy Raskin. Can I just add to this?
Sure, please.
The Senate is a cautious, deliberative body for a reason. We consider public safety and health to be the highest law. So the legislation we're talking about is not pro-fracking, it's not anti-fracking, but it says there should be no fracking without the necessary studies and protection for the environment and the public health. And I think that there are lots of members of the General Assembly who are just tuning in to this discussion now. And, many of us feel that we need to look before we leap, and that these reserves have been with us for a long time. And we don't want to be caught in a bum's rush to engage in a series of activities that we'll come to regret. So we will proceed deliberately and thoughtfully, and I think that means in the interest of the public health and environmental protection.
Thank you, Beth.
Alex, if I might, this is Heather Mazier. I also think what you're going to see as a different part of the equation this session is the ratcheting up of the attention and focus and engagement of the grassroots environmental community and public health community on this. We have a range of activities planned, including a conference on this issue on December 8th that we're conducting that is really getting everyone and their marching orders in line in terms of what needs to happen to raise the level of awareness and education in the Senate to match the level of engagement on this that we've seen already in the House of Delegates the last 2 years. And we think that we have learned lessons from the battles of the last two sessions on this that will inform our approach for winning this one in the Senate this go-around.
Yeah, and just to follow up on that, this is Diana from CCAN. We are expanding our coalition of you know, broad-reaching groups ranging from public health to environmental to consumer protection groups across the state of Maryland. And, you know, there has been a real response to our education efforts on this issue from many people across Maryland. And so this next year, we're definitely going to be seeing a much bigger push from the advocacy world on this particular issue.
Thank you.
This is Ellen Gilmer from Energy Wire. Delegate Maggio, you mentioned that the authorization for charging fees, that $10 fee per acre for oil and gas leases, may be pursued again in the next legislative session. Would that be something that would go within the fracking moratorium? And if so, would that affect the bill's possibility of working its way to the Senate and through the Senate?
It's one of the provisions that we're working on. We haven't finalized all of the legislative language yet leading into January, but it's something that we're looking at and seeking counsel on. And so I hesitate to make a final decision because we don't have that language finalized yet, but it's definitely a part of the conversation of whether or not it's something that we do as a separate initiative or have it be wrapped up in the language of the moratorium legislation. And so one way or another, we are very focused on the fact that we want to come out of this session with a clear legislative moratorium and also a vehicle for which the industry can step up to pay for this for these studies should they decide that they want us to move forward in Maryland.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, this is Holly Nunn with the Gazette. I wanted to know, with the price of natural gas dropping so quickly, do you guys consider any danger as far as, you know, kind of gas companies just leaving Maryland and deciding to go elsewhere because it's too much trouble? And this is for anybody. Jump in.
Yeah, this is Brian Frosch. I'm happy to talk about that. Well, you know, it's not necessarily going to be cheaper to drill somewhere else than it is in Maryland. And, I mean, the short answer is no. The gas is there. It's going to be there. Sooner or later, it's going to be useful and economical to produce from Maryland if it's safe. And, no, they're not going to go anywhere else. They bought leases here. They may decide to drill later rather than sooner. But it's still a valuable commodity, and it's in limited supply or it'd be free. So, no, I don't think that's a big concern.
All right, thank you.
Okay, well then let's go ahead and move on to closing statements from all of the speakers. We'll go in the same order as the initial statements, starting with me, Diana Atsikan, Senator Frosch, Senator Raskin, and finally Delegate Mazur. Atsikan is proud to join groups on the front lines of fracking from across the country today to speak with one clear voice. EPA must close a glaring regulatory loophole that has allowed the oil and gas industry to withhold critical information about the most dangerous part of this drilling process, the use and release of toxic chemicals into our communities and environment. Shale states like Maryland must protect themselves from the fracking rush until the full impacts from fracking are studied and fully understood. Senator Frosch?
I don't have anything substantive to add. Let me just say thanks to CCAN, and it's a pleasure to be on this call with my colleagues, Heather and Jamie, and look forward to working with you all.
Thank you. Senator Raskin?
Yes, and I want to thank my colleagues and everybody on the call for participating. And I guess I would just close by saying that, you know, this is an old and classic story where there is one special interest that's very eager to press forward, and it's perfectly understandable why. There's a lot of money to be made, but we have a responsibility to the public generally, to its health, and to the quality of the environment for generations to come. And so that's why I'm very interested in working with Delegate Mazier and Senator Frosch and Senator Pinsky on this legislation.
All right, thank you. And then finally, Delegate Mazier, any closing statements?
Well, this issue isn't going to go away. We find out every year of more shale deposits at varying levels and more risks and dangers associated with this activity where other states have done it. I'm proud of the fact that Maryland is the only state that sits on shale gas that's not currently drilling because we have set this pragmatic course. Second chances are expensive, and we must get it done right the first time. And I'm eager for us to continue sending a strong message to the oil and gas industry that they don't get to tell us that in order to have access to the domestic energy supply that is available through shale and the potential jobs they say will come along with it, that we have to accept flammable tap water, earthquakes, and livestock kills as just a natural course of business in doing this form of drilling. This is America, and we expect them to innovate, and we expect to use the science and the facts to determine the course in Maryland on whether this can be done right and whether we do this at all. And I'm very appreciative of Senators Frosch and Raskin and Pinsky stepping up to partner with me this session in a very high-profile way with all the advocates that are making this their priority as well. We've got a strong team in place to get this done, and the oil and gas industry is being served their fair warning that we're going to get it done this year.
Okay, great. Well, thank you all for joining the call and participating in the call. If any journalists would like to follow up with any of our speakers, please contact CCAN's Communication Director, Kelly Trout. Her number is 240-396-2022, or you can email her at Kelly, K-E-L-L-Y, at ChesapeakeClimate.org. Thanks again for participating in the call. Bye-bye.